Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. And podcasts of prior shows are also available there under Public Affairs. Today is September 23rd, 2020. The markets were down today with the Dow closing at 26,763, the NASDAQ at 10,632, and the S&P at 3236. Tonight, we are talking about considerations for cash retiree cash flow management. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Lori C is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. I do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live, you can give your question to Lori C. and she'll write it down and bring it into the studio. If you have questions that are beyond the program parameters, you can also email them through yourfinancialchoices.com. So the topic tonight, one of our listeners asked that I cover managing cash flow in retirement for retirees who maybe are having a hard time, that it's not as obvious to make ends meet. So I thought tonight I will attempt to do that. So some of what we are talking about tonight also can still apply to, you know, kind of any cash flow management program. So I will touch on budgeting a little bit as well. And I do want to cover some services that are available to seniors who may be struggling even more, and I will do that, you know, toward the end of the show as well. So I want to break this down into kind of five areas. One, where are you now? Two, what is cash flow management and how is that different in retirement? Three, what contributes to cash flow when we're not working anymore? Four, what tools are available to help me manage my cash flow? And five, what resources are available for seniors who are really struggling? So to start with, where are you now? And again, some of this we probably have covered in prior shows, topics when I talk about cash flow related topics on the show. Or when I have talked about taking an inventory of your financial picture. So this is where we're going. So where are you now? So ask yourself if you have an inventory of what you have as far as assets, liabilities, insurance, what sources of incoming cash you have, and your fixed expenses. So when we talk about assets, liabilities, insurance, why is that important? Well, we need to know what you're going to start with. What is the picture that we're dealing with? Because there are smarter ways to, you know, manage your financial picture. And so you have to have an inventory to know what buckets you might be tapping. So assets would be, do you have cash? Do you have savings accounts, checking accounts? Do you have retirement accounts or outside of retirement accounts, non-retirement accounts? We sometimes call that non-qualified money. If you're talking to an advisor, they might say qualified money is retirement, non-qualified is non-retirement. Those terms don't always work exactly right when they're using it like that, but I won't correct them too much. But so basically, what kind of assets are we talking about? Do you have a home? Liabilities, do you have a mortgage on that home, for example, because that could mean something? Or is your home paid off? That could mean something when you're in those retirement years to have as a resource. So we want an inventory of those assets, an inventory and what kind they are. If you have a partner or a spouse, how are those assets titled? Liabilities, I mentioned a mortgage. Not only what is the balance on the mortgage, what is the term of the mortgage, and what is the interest rate you have on that mortgage? What other kind of liabilities? Do you have credit cards? If you have credit cards, what are the balances? What is the minimum monthly payment? And what is the interest rate? The reason I ask about is insurance is if you do have limited assets, you want to make sure that you have insurance to protect those assets and protect them in the event something were to happen, you know, car, homeowners, or renter's insurance. If you are a retiree, we're not usually talking about disability at this point, but we still might look to see if you have life insurance or long-term care insurance. Typically, and the framework for the show tonight from our listener was really people who are struggling a little bit in their retirement years, not people who have unlimited assets. So typically, these are not the people who would necessarily have long-term care insurance, because long-term care insurance may be too expensive for you. If you were fortunate enough to work for a company that offered group life insurance 20 years or group long-term care insurance 20 years ago, you might have a great deal on that. And think twice about letting go a benefit like that if you indeed subscribe to that. So I just was talking to someone this morning, and they had long-term care insurance that they pay $68 a month for, and that's like nothing. And she said, I think I'm going to let that go. And it's like, she's almost 70 years old. It's not something I would probably recommend letting go when it's so affordable. And that could be a huge resource when you may eventually need care, if indeed at all you needed care. So the first part is, where are you now? Take this inventory of your assets, your how they're titled, what they are, the character of what they are, meaning, again, as I said, retirement or non-retirement, because that means something. Your liabilities, how much they're costing, means something. And, you know, just to make sure you have insurance. The insurance could be important, too, if you have whole life insurance. Sometimes there's some cash value there. Again, if we're talking about people who might be struggling, you generally haven't bought whole life insurance, because that could be something that could be more expensive. But who knows? You might at one time have had more resources and may have bought a life insurance policy that built up cash value. Or sometimes we find out that parents have bought policies for their children, and there might be some cash value there as well. So that would be important to know about that when we're trying to find how you're going to fund your retirement years and what resources we're going to use. So you take this inventory, and then you want to think about what kind of large expenditures you might have in the future, like the next 5 years, such as a new car, home improvement, or family vacation. You need to understand what you have and where you are to get where you want to go. So it is a picture of today, but then also kind of matching that up with your goals. So what are you going to need in the next 5 years? So if you said today, you know, here is my money, here are my resources, and I spend this much money, but you didn't factor in that you have to buy a car or you have to do a home improvement, then you're not going to budget properly today. So we want to talk about what that looks like too. So tonight we are talking about retiree cash flow management, and in particular for those people who might be, you know, struggling a little bit, to try to give you some ideas. And hopefully if you're on the cusp of retirement and thinking about retirement, this would be especially timely to tune in tonight and listen to this. We are at our first break. If you have questions, you're welcome to call, talk live on air with us or off air. Give your question to Lori C. The phone number is the same, 610-758-8810. Back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and it may be tax deductible. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. Tonight, we're talking about retiree cash flow management. And this part of the show, we're talking about where are you now. And I do want to mention when you first retire, let me give the phone number one more time, 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. If you have questions, you can talk live on air with me or give your question to Lori C. and she'll write it down and bring it in to me if you're a little bit shy about going on air. You could also send email questions through email at yourfinancialchoices.com. So again, if we kind of take this inventory, it's not just about that either, though, right? When we first retire, you do go through a period of transition. And I do like to stress this, that when you're going through a period of transition, it's a transition in your financial life, your personal life, and even your emotional support systems. So that could change, especially as you move out of work. Out of that work environment, you don't have money coming in, you're not talking around the water cooler with your coworkers, it can feel a little isolating, which might lead to behavior that you may not have predicted, like going out more, shopping, gambling, or traveling as you look for ways to connect outside of the work environment. So you want to plan ahead to avoid these traps, just be careful of that. Think about, visualize what you're going to do in your retirement. For example, volunteering is something you can do that will keep you connected and doesn't cost any money. And WDIY is one of those places you can do volunteer work. Playing bridge or joining a music group. These are ways that you might be able to connect without costing money and get into the habit of doing some of those other activities that would cost money that could also take you down a path that you may not want to go. Believe it or not, we do hear about people who go into retirement and then, start, maybe going gambling or shopping and running up credit cards. So you want to be very careful about those traps. So once you have an idea of what you have, you will start to see a picture of what steps you'll need to take to manage your goals. So if you need to buy a car in 3 years and you don't have enough money left in the budget, you might want to reevaluate what you're spending and how much you'll spend and when. You have to be careful, though, because sometimes little emergencies come up and you want to make sure you're building that in. So we do know that we can sometimes adjust the time of when we meet some of those goals, whether it's a home improvement or buying that car or taking that trip. You want to watch on doing the budget. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Budget seems to be a bad word, but as I've said on many, many shows, my experience tells me that people who know how much money they are spending are the people who have money. So let's be one of them. Okay. What if something arises unexpectedly? That's why we want to make sure that we have an emergency reserve. And I think the best time to build up that emergency reserve is while you're working rather than when you're in your retirement years. So let's try to build that emergency reserve up, a little early. Further considerations need to be made, of course, for healthcare, living arrangements, taxes, and longevity, meaning what is this budget kind of life going to mean if I think I'm going to live another 30 years? If I retire at 65 and the longevity in my family is 95, I hope that I thought that through. Generally, what I would like to see is if you have longevity in your family, then, you know, work a little longer. Number one, it does seem like many, many jobs keep people younger longer. It keeps you engaged. It keeps you, you know, like you have that purpose. If you're not someone who thinks once you retire, you're going to, you know, find something like volunteering or taking care of the grandkids or spending time with, you know, other folks. So think about that. So let's talk about what is cash flow management and how is that different in retirement? So basically, I think it's a system to know what resources there are to cover your current expenses and your future expenses. And it's important to differentiate from when you were working, when there was a known stream of money coming in, compared to working with what might be a bucket. So in my mind, I saw this for some reason, don't know why, maybe it's because I have one outside, an apple tree. So think of an apple tree bearing fruit, and that's while you're working. That apple tree is giving all these apples. You can go out and, you know, use them as you need. And think about a barrel of apples. So, and you know what they say about a barrel of apples, one bad apple can spoil the whole bunch. But if you have a barrel of apples, it's just kind of limited and you take from the barrel and then they're gone, you know, when you're done. So how are you going to be smart about using those apples? And then my next analogy in my head, this is what I do when I write off these shows, think of these weird stories, is what are we going to do? Maybe we could make applesauce and that lasts longer. So we have this apple tree and we can choose to just pick the apples, throw them in a barrel and just use them until they're gone. Or we can store them up, make applesauce, make it last a little bit longer. So this is your financial life, right? So what contributes to cash flow when we're not working anymore? And this is where it's really important with that inventory that you have done. And you can do this on paper, folks. You can do it with pencil and paper, or you can do it in an Excel spreadsheet. The reason I love Excel is it does the addition for you. You can pretty easily do addition in Excel. Believe me, if I can figure out Excel, most of you can. You can add it up in an Excel spreadsheet or just on a piece of paper, but you've done that inventory, and now we kind of want to, and that was assets and liabilities. I didn't talk about cash flow or expenses yet at this point. So now we want to talk about resources, and that is, you know, where is money coming from? So sometimes we have retirees who work part-time, and this is something that, you know, there's a lot of assumptions about what people know, and I don't want to make an assumption, but because what I have heard is that people think once they start collecting Social Security, they can't work anymore, or they'd have to pay it back. And that's not exactly the case. There are different rules for Social Security and working, depending on what your age is. If you start collecting Social Security before full retirement age, and that full retirement age is different for different people, depending on what year you were born, if you start collecting Social Security prior to full retirement age, then yes, there is a limit on the amount of part-time income you could have. And you know what? I forgot to check that limit, but I think it's getting close to $18,000. You could collect Social Security prior to full retirement age and still work and not have to pay anything back. And let's say it's around $18,000. It's only if you go over that threshold that you then have to start paying back a dollar for every $2 over the threshold. So let's say it is $18,000 and you make $20,000 and you're collecting Social Security, you're over $2,000. You would have to pay back $1,000 of the Social Security. So it's not the whole thing. You most definitely can work part-time while you're collecting Social Security. The wonderful thing about full retirement age is once you reach full retirement age, you can make any amount you want and not have to pay back any of the Social Security. So definitely as a retiree, if you are someone who might be struggling a little bit and it would help to have a little bit more income in your monthly amount, then by all means, think about working a part-time job. And Lori, thankfully she's here. She just gave me the limit for 2020. The limit is $18,240. So that's a pretty decent amount, coupled up with the amount of your Social Security, that could give you a really good cash flow. All right, so we'll talk about more of the resources when we come back from this next break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. And we are talking tonight about retiree cash flow management, and in particular for retirees who are struggling a little bit. And what I really, really love is that one of our listeners called and gave us this idea. So I really, really appreciate that, because number one, it's something that you're interested in learning more about. Love that. Can share it with all the other listeners. But that you reached out and gave me a show idea, because I've been doing this for a very long time and every week I have to think of an idea. So it's even more fun when my listeners call and give me an idea to talk about. We are talking about, as I said, retiree cash flow management. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with me or give your question to Lori C. and she'll write it down and bring it in to me. So we've already had our inventory. We're looking at our cash resources, so we're going to talk about resources and uses a little bit here. So part-time income, we already mentioned you can have part-time income and still collect Social Security. Just be aware of the caps, depending on what age you are when you collect. And in fact, in the year you turn full retirement age, there's even a higher cap, meaning for part of the year. And that's too complicated to explain, but you know, there is another option for you, even with collecting right before you turn full retirement age, in the year of full retirement age. So let's talk about pension or annuity income. Pension income, we're not seeing as much for people who have been fortunate enough to work at a company that provide a pension. That's typically what we call a defined benefit. And it's usually fixed. I rarely see cost of living adjustments on those anymore, COLA adjustments. Rarely see cost of living adjustments. So it's fixed typically. But that's nice, because you do have some fixed income coming in. You know what you can rely on. That makes it a lot easier when you go to figure out how much you have available to spend and where you're going to get the money from to cover your bills in retirement. So pension, pretty nice, fixed. And that's typically, again, that what you've earned from working at some job. Not all of us have pensions anymore. Some people who are very nervous or worried about their investments and don't want to take that responsibility of investing and make their money work for them, they may decide to buy an annuity where they take a chunk of money and put it into a product that promises to pay them back some monthly amount or annual amount. An annuity, that's where that word comes from, annual annuity amount. Typically, we see that as like an investment option. It's called a non-qualified annuity, where you take maybe non-retirement monies and put it into this annuity product, and the company, based on your life expectancy and some other options that you may choose, will pay you some fixed amount. And that way you know what to count on. And there's usually an element of income, obviously, to that. And if you do it in a retirement account, an IRA, the same thing kind of applies. It's just when you take distributions from them, they may be a little bit different. If it's a non-qualified annuity, meaning non-retirement money you use to buy it, some of it will be a return of your own principal and some of it will be a return of income. So not all of it might be income taxable. Whereas from a retirement account or a pension, it is all going to be income taxable, and that's ordinary income, taxable income. This is important when we're looking at cash flow management, because as we have to produce these resources of income to cover our expenses, we're going to have to factor in if we're going to have taxes on them as well. All right. Social Security income. If you only get Social Security income and you have no other source of income, then that Social Security is not going to be income taxable, because Social Security is only taxed based on, or included in income, based on how much other income you have on your return. So if someone only gets Social Security and nothing else, and it's $16,000 of Social Security, well, there's no other income on their return. It's not taxable, and you don't even have to file a tax return if that's all you have. Now, if you're getting $16,000 of Social Security and you have, $20,000 of IRA distribution, then there's a calculation we have to go through, a worksheet, and some of your Social Security could end up getting taxed depending on your filing status. And it's capped at being included up to 85% under current law. So if my Social Security, I'm going to pretend to use easy numbers, $10,000, and I had tons of other income on my return, the most that would be included would be $8,500 for taxable purposes. But it might be much less than that. It's a formula we have to go through to see how much is taxable. So it may or may not be all taxable. Okay? But that's typically fixed income that we also can count on. Back to looking at how we're going to manage in our retirement years, we want to look at the sources, the resources that we have that are fixed that we don't have to worry about. Now, if you are married and you have a spouse who's also getting Social Security and one of you passes away, that resource is gone. You know, you just step into the higher of the two. So when you're doing budgeting and thinking about how much you're spending, or you want to buy that house of your dreams when you retire, you better be careful, because you might not want to buy that house of your dreams when you retire based on the income you have of two spouses if one of them were to pass away and you lose that other resource. All right. We had a call come in, Hannah from Easton, and she said it's a two-part question. She's 61 years old on Social Security disability and also part-time self-employed, and she receives a 1099. She's taking on a very part-time job and wants to know how she should consider filling out her W-4. Also, when collecting a pension, is it better to have taxes taken out previous to receiving it? So what I would say, Hannah, is when you're working a part-time job and it's a 1099, it's self-employed income, it's not just income taxes that you have to worry about paying. It's also the self-employment tax, which is basically Social Security. And when we work, the employer pays half of it and we pay half of it. It's Social Security and Medicare. When we're self-employed, we pay both sides of that, both the Social Security and the Medicare tax. So you might want to kind of guess how much you're going to make in profit. You might have some expenses against that self-employment income as well. So based on your profit, what is the Social Security tax? Just assume, about 15% on that, 3% on state, 1% on local. So right there, you're at 20%. We haven't even factored in the Fed tax yet. The Fed tax will depend on how much other income you have on your return and how much this part-time income is. If your part-time income is like $5,000, chances are, if this and Social Security are your only other income, your Social Security might not even be income taxable then. So really, the taxes you might be incurring are the self-employment tax or the Social Security tax. You probably just want to run the numbers. Now, you could either pay the taxes through estimates for federal, or you could have Social Security withhold that. So on the W-4 form, you could say that you're whatever filing status you are, but there's no W-4 for self-employed person for a 1099. But there is, it's called an SS-4, I think, for Social Security. So you're not going to have a W-4 to file for self-employment income. I think it's the SS-4 you would file for Social Security to have withholdings. You can't have withholdings from self-employed income. That person's not going to withhold it. It's your responsibility to pay it. So you could try to have the Social Security withhold federal taxes that will help cover your income tax and your payroll tax, you know, your self-employment tax, that Social Security tax for federal purposes. And then you'd have to do quarterly estimates for your state and local taxes. All right. Hope that helps. And for a pension, yes, it's good to fill out a W-4P to have them withhold tax. But chances are they never withhold enough either. You might have to request that they withhold an extra amount. It all depends on your income. And I really can't tell you a dollar amount without, you know, running a projection. So I hope that helps, Hannah. Good luck with that. Folks, we're at the halfway point. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at...
Good afternoon, WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio. It's 79 degrees and fair skies. Weather this evening will have mostly clear skies with a low of 54, Thursday partly sunny with a high of 78, Thursday night, partly cloudy with a low of 55, and Friday, mostly sunny with a high of 78. Now back to Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you very much, James. Welcome back, folks. We are talking about retiree cash flow management, and right now we've already taken our inventory of our assets and our liabilities. Now we're talking about our resources, maybe some part-time income, understanding that that's not taboo. You can work part-time even when you've retired. This is the time you get to do something fun. I had a client who went and worked at a liquor store. He ended up with a pension. He didn't even know he was going to get one. I thought that's a great story. And this same gentleman, I think, also went and worked at the golf course and picked up golf balls. He loved it. He was able to be outside. He got exercise. I love hearing these stories. So don't think that just because you retire, you can't go do something fun and earn a little bit of money while you're doing it. And it certainly helps supplement it. Now, I understand that everyone is able to do that. So you want to make sure that you understand your picture before you let, you know, before you let go the you know, your wages. So resources, we talked about part-time income, pension or annuity income, Social Security. You could have cash or savings. That could be a resource. And cash or savings could also, you know, earn a little bit of interest income. You have your non-retirement investments. So you could tap if you have, you know, some mutual funds or ETFs or maybe some stocks in a investment portfolio. You could certainly tap those. We typically try to look at total return when we look at those buckets. What's the total return, not just what the dividend or the interest, you know, is on that income, but what kind of appreciation are we seeing in our investments? Because we might be able to tap a little bit of that. Maybe the dividends are only 2%, but you need a 4% withdrawal. Well, you know, if your return is 6% total, then you're doing a little bit of, you know, harvesting gains and things like that. So that could help fund some of your resources as well. It's not as predictable, though, so you got to be careful with that. Same thing with your retirement accounts. Those typically, we're talking about 401ks or 403bs that may have rolled over to IRAs or rollover IRAs. Those are typically invested. When you're pulling from retirement accounts, you again have to remember that that's going to be income taxable and you have to factor that in. And you may not, you know, put that together when you're taking the money out of the account. Oh, I need $10,000. I'm going to take it out of my IRA account. You take the $10,000 out of your IRA account, you know, spend it on that trip. And then you go to do your tax return and you realize, whoops, I forgot. Now that I put that $10,000 on my return, more of my Social Security is taxed, and now I owe $5,000 at the end of the year, and boom, where am I going to get that? Well, now I have to take more money out of my IRA, that kind of thing. You want to kind of make sure what is the consequence of the distribution of from whatever resource you're taking this money from. Now, granted, at some point when we're required minimum distribution age, RMD or MRD, whatever you might want to call it, minimum required distribution age, which is now age 72 since the SECURE Act, you will have to take money out. Some people take out more than their required minimum distribution, and some people take just the required minimum distribution. And for people who don't need the required minimum distribution, they may use some of it to fulfill charitable giving. So again, if we're talking about people who are kind of really on the edge of barely getting by, this usually isn't the group that is has access to huge retirement accounts. Although sometimes people who think they don't have money are the ones who actually do. But if you are someone, and I have seen this, someone who's really scraping by, but continue to insist on funding charitable giving, typically the church, I have seen people really do without so much and still give to the church. But they take out of their IRA, they put it in their bank account, and then they give it to the church. Well, if we can't talk you out of doing that, if you're scraping by, the church is probably going to be okay. But if you're scraping by and barely making ends meet, let's be smart about how we're taking care of our charitable giving then. And if your required minimum distribution age, and then again, that's age 70 and a half, you can do this. If you're pre-age 70 and a half, this won't work for you. You could make the distribution directly out of your IRA to the church or to that nonprofit and not have to pay tax on that distribution if you do it directly out of your IRA. So this is about being a little bit proactive in what you're doing in your retirement years. So when our caller said, hey, could you do a show on this? This is kind of what we're talking about. It's hard enough to maybe make ends meet. But let's reflect on what we're doing and think, is there a better way to do this? Or do I have other resources or other ways? Maybe when you were working, you were giving, you know, $50 a week to the church, but now you're retired and maybe giving $10 a week is going to be okay. So let's rethink some of those things. We have a question from Nasco in Bath. His dad is retiring, lives in the USA. When he applied for Social Security, they asked him if he will be collecting any foreign pensions. He's eligible for a pension in Bulgaria, but should he apply for it? Will it be considered income here and be taxable? Nasco, this is a great question, and it depends on which country, and I don't know if what treaty exists for Bulgaria, but generally what we do is we would have to go look up the treaty for the country that this would apply and see what would happen. So I have people who have who lived in the U.S. and earned Social Security, but they're residents of another country. That other country tells us the Social Security, they're going to withhold 30% withholding here on 85% of the benefit for Social Security, and they don't report the Social Security in the foreign country. I have other folks who live here, are residents here, are citizens here. They have pension and Social Security from a foreign country. There is a treaty. We do not, I'm trying to remember how we do this now because they both come in foreign increments. I believe the Social Security, I think, is taxed in the foreign country, but the pension is not taxed in the foreign country, and we have to report the pension here. So the pension is, the foreign pension is reportable here, but not the foreign Social Security, if I'm remembering that right. So it depends on the treaty and what is what the agreement is. So I would say your father should absolutely apply for the pension he has in Bulgaria. And when it's time for him to do that, I don't know your circumstance, so I've got to be careful what I say here. But he should absolutely apply for whatever he'd be eligible for in a foreign country. And he may have to pay tax on that money there. And you want to find that out because they may be able to withhold it right up front. And sometimes you have to have an account there where they would put it in, and then you can transfer it from that foreign account right here to your American account, or your U.S. account. So just think it through, talk it through, see if you can make sure you arrange it the proper way so that all the tax withholdings are taken care of accordingly in that foreign country. If you end up having a foreign account in another country, there may be some other reporting that you have to do. So, for example, if someone has a foreign bank account, if it's under $10,000, we do have to acknowledge on our Schedule B of our 1040 that we do have a foreign bank account. But if it's under $10,000 balance, we don't have to report anything further. Other than if there's income earned on that bank account, we do have to report the income. But we don't have to do any foreign asset reporting. If the account is within a certain dollar range, and it's too complicated for the show right now, but if there are large balances, then there could be some foreign reporting that you have to do, and it's critical that you do it if it's over the, you know, certain balances and everything. So in these circumstances, assuming he doesn't have a foreign bank account and he would just use it to get the pension, it's probably small enough that it might not require any extra reporting for you. But if it's money he's entitled to, I certainly would, research that further. Thank you for that question. I love calls like that. I love talking about things that we don't often see. So in looking at the resources, it is back to looking at the resources in our retiree cash flow management. We want to have an idea of what these are because we want to know what kind of fixed expenses we're going to have to cover and what's going to cover them. So I was just talking with someone today who said they wanted to make sure that their fixed income that was coming in was going to cover their fixed expenses. And I thought that's really great logic. They said, hey, if I know I have to spend this much every month, I want to make sure that I have that much money coming in every month. And that's a good that's good logic. The only thing is there still needs to be a little bit of extra money coming from somewhere to cover those non-discretionary expenses. And also sometimes what we find is that the fixed income that's coming in, remember I said earlier, there wasn't a cost of living adjustment on a pension. Sometimes if you've annuitized an annuity, it's fixed and it may not adjust either depending on what you contracted for. But expenses can go up. And sometimes we have expenses that are not monthly. They might be periodic. It could be real estate taxes. It could be your quarterly estimated tax payments if you have those. It could be that insurance bill. Those aren't regular bills that we see monthly. You have to kind of project this out and factor that in. So you understand the kind of income you have and the taxation of each, so you know if you have to budget for taxes, and it really can make a big difference in how you're managing your cash flow and how long your money will last as well. So now let's talk about the other side of resources, the uses. So we did touch on this slightly. When we're talking about cash flow, it's what's coming in, but it's also what's going out. So just be careful, again, those fixed expenses, and be careful what you're counting as covering things. So remember I said you might have a retiree who says they want to buy their dream house, but they don't have that paycheck anymore, and you have to factor in, you know, unforeseen expenses if all of a sudden you've moved into a new home and, you know, it's septic and it's going to cost you $50,000. And gosh, I never thought about that. So you want to be a little bit forward thinking in what kind of expenses you might have going forward. Buying a house, buying a car, that type of thing. Be careful of credit cards. So I mentioned earlier, we could get into some bad habits where if we don't think we have enough cash flow, we get a credit card and we put it on the credit card. That's just going to take you down into a spiral. So caution on credit cards for sure. I like using credit cards, so I don't want to say not to use a credit card because I hate debit cards. Debit cards can, you know, I feel can get you into trouble. So I don't have a problem with a credit card if you pay it off every month. So just be careful of that. So you want to make sure that your income is going to cover your expenses. So now I want to talk about what tools are available to help or manage your cash flow. Let me start by saying, in managing your cash flow, of course, there's going to be some tools. You might also want to bounce this off family members if they're trusted. You know, if you have a family member who is really great with money, good with budgeting, and they've done a really good job, there's nothing wrong with bouncing things off of them to kind of say, how are you doing it? How do you manage? Do you have a system? So don't be afraid to talk about some of this with people. I had a client once who just kept giving and giving to his children. His children didn't know his financial situation. I think they thought he was an endless resource for them, and he kept giving them money. And I had to say to him, you need to stop, because you're going to run out of money. You need to stop, you know, being the bottomless bank. And, you know, finally he did, but it took a long time, and he had already depleted quite a bit of his resources, which really changed what his retirement looked like from what it could have been. And in the end, maybe he was happy to have helped his children, but I'm not so sure. I don't know. So when we come back from this next break, we'll talk a little bit about some of the tools you can use to keep track of this, and then some other resources that are available. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement.
Thank you to all of WDIY's generous, sustaining members. Setting up an automatic monthly gift on your credit card is the easiest way to support your listening and ensure WDIY remains a strong and thriving public resource. Become a sustaining member of WDIY today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 7 or visit wdiy.org. Thank you for your support.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. If you have questions, you're welcome to call in live or off air. Love questions. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can also send questions through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com. Let's talk about some of the tools. James Johnson had mentioned this to me as an idea, talking about budget apps. And there's a number of different kind of apps that people can use today. I would say that there's different generations that are more comfortable with certain apps than others. So there are apps out there that will help you save money, that will bring all your accounts together and help you manage your financial picture. And then there's budget apps that literally just help you kind of with your expenses and management. As retirees, we have some folks who are probably more adept at using smartphones and their computers, and others who, you know, aren't comfortable doing that at all. As I mentioned earlier, there's nothing wrong with pencil and paper. I have had clients with, you know, millions of dollars who put everything in a journal. You know, one of those books we used to have in college, I forgot what they were called, the black and white little speckles on the outside. Anyway, you could put it in a journal, a book, whatever, on a piece of paper, on accounting paper. I love accounting paper. You could put it on accounting paper, or you could do it in an Excel spreadsheet. Nothing wrong with good old-fashioned pencil and paper. Some people use envelopes. Whatever works for you. That's the point. Whatever works for you. Real quick, we've talked about the funnel method on shows in the past. If you have all of your resources, deposit, like Social Security, pension, you know, interest or dividends from your investments, all go into a savings account, and once a month you transfer what your monthly expenses are to your checking account and you write checks out, the account in your checking account should always kind of, you know, go to zero, or, you know, balance out or whatever, in and out, in and out. If your savings account accumulates, it means you're not spending as much, or that's for those, you know, periodic payments. But if you're constantly having to refill it, or you're constantly short, or you're bouncing checks, it means you're spending more than you thought you were going to. That's the funnel method. If you have to keep grabbing from your savings. So it's kind of like a safety check. Those are really easy things to do. Some other options available, and this was on senioradvisor.com. This is a website that I think, you know, has some information available for seniors. And this was an article written by Kristen Hicks, again, on senioradvisor.com. And it was called 8 Tools to Help Seniors Manage Their Finances. And some of these budget apps I thought looked interesting, but one thing looked really interesting. So I'm going to highlight a couple of these, not all 8 things. One was Budget Plus. And it provides a lot of the, you know, features and functionalities of most budget sites, but you can import the information from your financial accounts manually. There's one called Budget Simple. And that was one where you have a free online budgeting tool. You can either link your accounts or enter your financial information manually. And then the third one is called Economic Checkup, and that's the one I want to talk about in particular. But first, I have a call from Gene in Easton. Hi, Gene. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear very well.
Hi. How can I help you tonight?
Yes. My question is, I've been working my entire life, every 2 weeks. But all of a sudden, the company decides to pay weekly. Which would be in the best interest, to get paid biweekly or weekly?
Well, I'm not sure why the company would have changed it, but personally, I would say it would probably be better to get paid weekly, only because you get the money that much faster to do with it what you want to do with it. Now, if in the old days, I had a job where they only paid us monthly. And boy, oh boy, did you have to be so tight all month. But then when people got their paycheck that once a month, they went crazy and would spend it. Whereas the weekly one might be able to help people budget a little bit better. So I don't think it's necessarily better or not. It's just how you budget. I don't think it matters from an employer standpoint how they're paying. I'm surprised they would go to weekly, because it would be more, you know, transactions, more payroll that they're having to keep track of. But are you finding it an issue to have a weekly paycheck over biweekly?
Yes, but the thing is, I'm just thinking whether or not if you pay biweekly, they take more taxes, and if you pay weekly, if they take less taxes. Oh, how this has worked out. That's why I have that question.
Well, yeah, it might look like it's less taxes, but when you add it up, it should be about the same, because the employer, when they're doing payroll, they just simply go to an employer table provided by the IRS. And if someone's getting paid weekly, they do take out a smaller amount, but they're taking it out 52 times a year, whereas biweekly, it's a little bit bigger amount, but they're only doing it 26 times a year. So it should all wash out in the end. Okay.
Oh, okay, okay.
All right. So good luck. Thanks, Gene. Thanks for calling. Have a good night. So this third tool that's available, again, from the senioradvisor.com that they pointed out, which I think has really deserved some extra attention, it's called Economic Checkup, and it's provided by the National Council on Aging, NCOA. It's called the Economic Checkup. The website for this is agewellplanner.org. That's agewellplanner.org. So the Economic Checkup provides a customized set of resources based on some basic information you provide. They offer calculators to help you create a budget, plan your retirement spending, and find ways to cut spending. They also help point you toward any government resources you may qualify for to help you increase your income in retirement or save on some of your main expenses. If figuring out your budget and resources makes you realize you could actually really benefit from a few more years of work, the website also provides resources to help you develop the skills you need for a job and to find employment. And when I went on that website, agewellplanner.org, there were a lot of other resources there as well. So I thought that looked like a nice website. And I do love, nonprofit type of websites. Another budget app that's out there that's been very, very popular, and again, it's free, is Mint.com. Mint is one of the most popular tools available. It is free, and they do help you manage your finances. What does it say? Part of what's hard about managing your finances is that it requires paying attention to so many different accounts and bills and trying to remember them all. Mint brings them all into one place for you, so you only ever have to log in there to manage everything. And you can also set up alerts and things like that. Other apps, there's one called Personal Capital, one called Pocket Guard, one called Prism, and one called You Need a Budget. And according to this article, You Need a Budget is the only one that does have a user fee every month, but some people really love it. It requires more time on your part you know, all of these budget apps. And sometimes as we get older, we're not as comfortable doing things on our phone. We're not always as comfortable doing, James was pointing something out to me. Aceyourretirement.org is another website.
I've seen them. I've seen the commercials for it, so that's why I pointed it out.
Okay, aceyourretirement.org. And AARP is also another organization that has a lot of resources, AARP. They have a lot of resources available and taking advantage of discounts. Now, here's the thing. When they talk about taking advantage of discounts, you know, you're a senior, you're a member of AARP, you can, you know, qualify for some of these discounts. That means you're spending money. And what we were trying to talk about tonight is how to be careful for those people who are struggling a little bit more. So I don't want to encourage people taking advantage of discounts to feel like, oh, you're getting a deal, so let's go spend money. No, do you really need to go out to eat? And if you have to go out to eat, well, then, yeah, be smart about it and take advantage of discounts that are available to you. But it might be just as much fun to take that money that you would have spent going out and put together, you know, a charcuterie board or, you know, some kind of little ensemble and have people outside where you can social distance and, you know, it could be cheaper that way. All right. So some of these resources, senioradvisor.com, agewellplanner.org, aceyourretirement.org, aarp.org, using a budget app or using, you know, pencil and paper. I'm totally good with that as well. Some other resources too, and when I read this, it said so many people are not taking advantage of this. You know, it's food stamps. It's the SNAP program. I think they tried to take, you know, the idea of food stamps makes people feel uncomfortable, so they renamed it SNAP, which stands for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. It can help prevent hunger by providing eligible adults and their families with financial assistance to purchase nutritious food. Yet only 45% of eligible seniors participate in SNAP, the lowest participation rate of all demographic groups. The reasons for this include confusion about eligibility, stigmas around asking for help, and a burdensome application process. So on aarp.org, I think that they have information there about making it a little bit easier. It says, or SNAP itself has done. SNAP now offers a shorter, simplified application process for seniors. It's called the Elderly Simplified Application Project, and it makes it easier for older adults to participate in SNAP by streamlining the application process and extending the certification period. It uses data matches to reduce the amount of verification information seniors have to provide. It extends the certification period for 36 months and waives the recertification interview requirement. Hey, you might be someone who just needs a little bit of help, and this could be that little bit of help. If it gives you a little bit of breathing room and you have a little bit of assistance with your food and nutrition so that you can, you know, take care of your, you know, your prescriptions or something like that, you know, take advantage of it. There are a number of other programs as well. There's Medicaid for Medicare enrollees. Again, there's income limits and criteria you have to meet for this, which I did not research because there's so many programs. On that website, agewellplanner.org, they have 2,500 benefit programs that you might be eligible for. And if you go through that little calculator that they have, that economic checkup, and do that by entering that information there, it will alert you to programs that may be available for you. So that would certainly be something you want to check out. So in your retirement years, if you're struggling, please take advantage of some of these resources. If you don't have a computer or you're not comfortable doing that, you can certainly ask for help from a trusted family person. Please don't be taken advantage of. Watch out for scams and all of that as we age. But you do have opportunities maybe to take advantage of some programs that would give you a little breathing room. All right. I think I'm coming up at the end of the show. I hope I covered as much as I could. I hope that our listener who suggested the topic tonight was able to listen and that maybe some of it struck home. Again, the National Council on Aging, that economic checkup would certainly be something to check out. Folks, I will next week, I'm going to be discussing year-end financial planning, a review of year-end financial planning and opportunities. So please stay tuned for that. And I'll be covering those kinds of topics as we go through the end of the year to make sure that you're staying tuned to your own financial life, because I really think in this period of pandemic, a lot of us have kind of checked out in a lot of areas of our life, and our financial life is one area that we should not check out from. So I want to keep on top of that and help you keep on top of it. So I will discuss year-end financial planning and opportunities next week. We have coming up Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Remember, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Thank you, Lori C. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, James. Have a great week.